Joe Rogan Podcast, check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
Oh, hello, man.
Hey, bro.
Is this how you're wearing your mask now on the wrist? That's cool.
I just forget to bring it with me, so if I just, like, hang it on my nose, I just bring it.
It's a new move.
Yeah.
People will do that now. They will see you and say, one side of the watch, other side of the watch.
Put your miniature schnauzer right here.
Aw. You have a cute little dog, dude. That picture of your dog is adorable.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's out.
What's her name?
Taking a walk. Miho.
Miho?
Yeah, she's 15.
What does Miho stand for?
Beauty, crest of a wave. It's Japanese.
Oh, okay. But
deadly little Miho from Sin City.
Which one was that?
She had the swords and the arrow.
From the movie?
Yeah, Sin City. Yeah.
Sin City was a movie, but it was also the comic book, right?
Comic book, yeah.
Was she in the comic book as well?
I don't know.
That movie was fucking good, man.
Yeah.
I forgot all about that movie until just now.
Yeah, she's named after Deadly Little Miho.
So we were talking about how, we didn't talk about how the new Pussifer album comes out on the 30th. Mm. I listened to what is available, and it sounds awesome. There's a lot of layers to that shit, man. There's all kinds of sounds coming at you from all over the place.
Yeah, Matt, normally what happens with our recording process is that I'll have an idea or Matt will have an idea, and we'll just kind of set down a direction. For example, like I'll go mandolin, drum machine, banjo. Let's just start there and start to see what we can build on this thing. And then you have an album like Conditions of My Parole. On this, he picked up an old Fairlight, and making a Fairlight actually work nowadays.
I don't know what a Fairlight is.
It's a synthesizer, and you've heard it on, you know, Peter Gabriel used it, Art of Noise, like I think Yes might have used versions like a Synclavi or a Fairlight. I'm going to get that wrong, and Matt's going to just, he's got his face in his palm right now. So there's very specific sounds that come out of these, and there's a learning curve to go with it. But the cool thing is that it kind of paints you into a sonic corner, and then you start layering on that. And then, of course, unconsciously or consciously, you start thinking of all the stuff you heard in the 80s, you know, that was used on.
Yeah.
So you start reacting in that way for those sounds. And then, you know, Karina coming in on top of me, adding her piece, and then just that kind of, you know, that kind of three-way chess that we have going on.
As a non-musician, it's always interesting to see, like, the way people react to synthesizers. Mm-hmm. The synthesizer's got to be one of the most polarizing sounds in all of you. But obviously, it's responsible for some amazing songs.
Absolutely.
Undeniably.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
for whatever reason, people are either a love or hate that kind of sound.
Well, yeah, whenever, you know, when you have people that are like, I don't know, man, I like live music. You know, totally live music. So you're big, you know, and then you kind of wait, come back around, and go, what do you think of Kraftwerk? Oh, I love Kraftwerk. they put robots on stage and push a button, and you pay money to watch like four mannequins.
It's basically
play
like
the
a
songs.
Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah. Yeah. But I love Kraftwerk, and you know, so, but it's funny when people don't quite make the connection of they don't know what it is they're saying.
Well, it becomes almost an ideological thing. It's like you're opposed to it because it's a non-cool thing or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember when Jump came out and everybody was like, what the fuck has happened to Van Halen? Have they lost their mind? What is this? Meanwhile, one of the biggest fucking songs they've ever put out. Ever.
Yeah.
Just a massive, super blockbuster.
Yeah.
But some people were just like, this is the end.
Well, I remember living in Boston. We had the classic rock station playing.
AAF or WBCN?
I think it might have been BCN. What's the other one?
AAF, BCN.
I think it was BCN. But it was a classic rock channel. And this was 87?
Yeah.
88?
I was there.
And I remember people losing their shit because they tried to play Van Halen on that station. They're like, that's not classic rock, bro. They really were very adamant about, like, no. Van Halen is hair band. That's like some kind of glam rock thing. They were, you know, Bostonians just getting their, you know, panties in a bunch over Van Halen on BCN.
Yeah, there was a real resistance to hair metal. There's hair band music came around. And even Guns N' Roses. Mm-hmm. Like people put in the hair band category, and I'm mm-hmm. like, boy, you're splitting hairs.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's hardly hair band music. I mean, it's
yeah.
Sweet Child of Mine and, like, you know, Welcome to the Jungle. I mean, these are fucking great songs. It's hard. Like, hair band to me is like, I get why people would like it. I understand it, but it's simple. It's like, it's a piece of candy.
Yes.
You know? Whereas, like, you know, Guns N' Roses they put out some fine meals. You know, some of their songs were, you know,
one meal, but yeah. It was a good meal.
But they were, like, well crafted pieces. Whereas, you know, I don't want to name some bands, but there's some, you know, some bands, they wore eyelash extensions and fucking crazy hair and.
Bowie.
He did See? Do, yeah, he that's did. Right, yeah. You're right, good point. Yeah, but.
Nobody's giving him shit.
Nah, you can't give him shit. He's, well, how undeniable was Michael Jackson that even though people think he most likely did some horrible shit,
mm-hmm.
they still play his music?
Yeah, and oddly enough, the Fairlight is part of some of those records.
Sure.
Boom, 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 boom. That's all those synthesizers we're talking about.
When did synthesizers come around? Like, what was the first introduction? Like, when did they hit modern music?
I'm having a brain fart. Damn it. Maybe it'll come.
Okay.
There was
sound manipulation that band started introducing prior to that, right? Like Hendrix started doing weird shit with pedals and
yeah, you had a Mellotron, which is like kind of recorded on tape and it's looped and you're playing, you know, the recorded sounds on these looping cassettes, but that was still kind of analog.
Mm.
And there's a specific keyboard and I'm bad at that. It must be the
no worries
56, bro.
Dude, I'm 53. I get it. my brain is. My memory is so inconsistent. Like, sometimes it's amazing. And sometimes it's just straight dog shit. Like, people I've known for 10 years, I can't remember their fucking name. It doesn't make any sense. Things that I know what that thing is, and I can't fucking...
It's, by the way, it's good to see George over here.
George?
George.
His name is Brian. Oh, we should probably explain what's happened. Yeah.
This almost didn't happen.
Young Jamie got the COVID. Young Jamie's got a new lady friend.
Oh.
And the new lady friend wanted to go to a bar. And young Jamie was like, okay. So he went to a bar. And bars in Texas, they do not give a fuck out here. They go outside and they're on a patio and they just drink like there's no COVID. And they're bumper to bumper with people, all partying down. And a few days later, Jamie thought he had a sinus infection. He was just all stuffed up and felt like shit. Only for a day. And then the next day, he started to feel better. The day after that, he's like, I can't be COVID. He's like, I know I have allergies. He has allergies. And it's ragweed season, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Comes in, gets tested. And the only one we were concerned with is our employee, Jeff, our friend Jeff. And Jeff was actually fairly close to Jamie for a few minutes talking to him. I never got any closer than 20 feet from him, and most of the time I was about 30 to 40 feet from him. As soon as I found, because Jamie came in first and got tested first, and as soon as I found he didn't feel well, I stayed the fuck away from him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought because I was in the room with him, maybe I would have to quarantine, but the doctor said, how close were you? And I was like, no closer than 20 feet. He's like, you don't have to worry about it. Just get tested every day. And so I'm 3 negative tests in a row, so I'm 99.999% sure I'm good. But
yeah.
Jeff, I'm a little worried about, so Jeff's not here today.
Poor bastard.
But we almost didn't do it, because I thought the protocol was I was going to have to stay. But they were saying, no, they consider close contact, 6 feet or closer for more than 15 minutes.
And that, like really close.
Oh, that kind of close. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if you, do you get it from fucking? Brian, you would know.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's liquids.
That's how I got mine.
Did you? Wow. Amazing. But you fuck so much. How would you know that's how you got it?
I fucked myself.
Oh.
Because you're not sure then.
So anyway, we pulled it off and we did do it. So here we are. Awesome. The other thing that's coming out tomorrow is a tape where apparently Rudy Giuliani tries to fuck a 15-year-old. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
What's funny is, like, apparently his take on it And again, he's older than us, so his memory's probably terrible. Because it happened quite a while ago that they filmed this. Mm-hmm. His take on it was that he was proud that they didn't get him the way they've got other people. And the article that I was reading last night, it's the death of journalism is so goddamn apparent when you read articles and then you see the actual thing and you go, what the fuck did you just write? Because this is not what it is.
Right.
This is like these takes on things that are so... There's so much hyperbole and there's so much exaggeration and bias. Until we watch it, we won't be able to.
I'm excited tomorrow though. But you know, you have me at Borat. So.
Yeah, I had Borat. So yeah. I mean, listen, I still think Ali G in the House mm-hmm. is one of the most underrated comedy films of all time.
It is good,
especially if you like weed. I wouldn't recommend it this month, Sober October, but when Sober October's over, Ali G in the House. I actually bought a UK version of a VHS player because it was only available on VHS from the UK.
Okay.
Was it VHS or DVD?
Are you talking about
might have been a DVD.
I think it was DVD.
Talking about the actual Ali G series?
No, it was a movie.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that
Ali
one too.
Ali G made a movie.
But even the series wasn't available over here
right.
for a long time.
For a long time.
You had to like do the conversion.
But he had a movie. NTSC. You're right, Brian. It was a DVD, and it was an all-regions. I had to buy an all-regions player. And because it, like players were limited to like certain regions. It was really weird.
Yep.
I
had that, too.
Do you know what the science behind that is?
It was different frequencies, I think. It was PAL versus H. Or
NTSC.
NTSC or something
right.
like that.
And some of them were universal. They would right. play everything.
Yeah, some of the cheaper ones that you could buy, like at Fry's, had like a secret like menu. You could switch it back and forth.
Yeah, that was the key, right? It was like a cheaper one.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to buy one. I literally bought a DVD player specifically for this film. Me and Eddie Bravo got barbecued, and we watched this and could not stop laughing. It's a fucking hilarious movie. It's really ridiculous. So apparently, that comes out tomorrow,
yep.
and Rudy Giuliani is allegedly trying to fuck a 15-year-old. But it wasn't really a 15-year-old. She was in her 20s playing a 15-year-old. Here goes. Rudy Giuliani speaks out about, on Borat 2 controversy, calls it hit job over Hunter Biden campaign. Well, how could it be a hit job over the Hunter Biden campaign if they shot it in July, bro?
There's no logic to it, right? They're just trying to cover their ass.
I think they have to say that. I want to know what the girl looked like. Because they said she was playing a girl who was 15, but I believe she's like 25 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
How old is the gal?
Oh, here's the...
Oh, that's him with his hand out of his pants. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Looking for Hunter Biden's laptop in there somewhere.
I guess he was saying he was tucking it in his shirt, but...
Why would he do that? The bed. Yeah. Imagine if that was him in your room lying on the bed. You'd be like, hey, man, what are you doing? Unless, like, you'd have to be a good friend
yeah.
where they were so comfortable they could lie on their bed and adjust their balls.
Yeah, no.
But if you just met a person and you're lying on the bed with the hand on the Johnson.
Yeah.
Does he have sunglasses on, too?
It looks like.
He's on coke. That's what I think. He's got to be. He's probably smoking it. Smoking coke. He's on Viagra and... This girl's touching him, too.
She's checking off his microphone, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe he did have the wire tucked, because they do tuck them down your pants.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah.
I would like to see the film, the footage of it.
We're gonna. Tomorrow.
Yeah. Because if that's the only thing that does make sense in his defense. Like because sometimes they put those things down your pants, and you do got to get in there to get the wire out. If he's taking the microphone off.
Yeah, I don't know.
He could also...
I don't really just put mine back here, like drop it down my jacket and put it on the back here. I don't know why he's putting it in his pants.
True.
That's true, too.
Yeah, why would you have it in the front?
He might have had it in the front pocket so he could sit down. They often do that. They'll put the mic in your front pocket as opposed to in your back area, because if you sit down on a chair, that thing digs into your back. I've had it in my front pocket before. But the thing is, like, the gal, see...
They're being pretty good about not showing her.
Yeah. I want to know, like, did he know that she was supposed to be 15? Or did he just think she was a girl? Here's the thing. If she is in her 20s, and this is all speculation, right? If she is in her 20s and she's beautiful, the problem is he's gross and he's old. And a beautiful girl, if she was, and we would have to see the footage, but if she was being flirtatious, like, he's helpless.
Yeah.
He's under a spell.
Nice.
Like an old fucked up looking dude like that, if he thinks like, oh my God, this might, like, that might this be the it. Last time.
I'm going to have a heart attack tonight.
Yeah. That a gal who's an attractive young gal decides to fuck a famous lawyer.
A dude in his position has to know that that's coming. Like, that you.
That a setup is coming?
A setup is coming.
Maybe yeah. not anymore. Yeah. Maybe he yeah. forgot. Yeah. Like, he's old, Maybe. Dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to think. Not only that, but he's been under this tremendous stress of being a top lawyer for the most fucked up administration in the history of the United States. So it's like the legal shit he's been battling back and forth.
Yeah. It's a shit show.
It's a shit show. His brain's probably hosed. And he's probably in this hotel room going, oh, the universe is throwing me a bone. Oh, yes.
Yes, it is.
Oh, yes.
A big old bone. Just not for you to chew on.
The hits never stop. It just never stops. There's like every time you think, well, the world's going to be normal today. I mean, we've gotten it all out of the way. Nope. No. New thing.
Arizona is now spiking in supposed cases of COVID.
Are they?
Yeah.
They were spiking for a while, but it was young folks, mm-hmm. and it wasn't an issue. It was like young folks were getting it, but the deaths were very low. You had a bad case, right?
I didn't have a bad, yes and no.
A medium bad case.
So it was one of those, you know, I'm in Australia. We went out to dinner, my buddy Todd Fox and Chris, and immediately food didn't taste right. But this is all hindsight, right? I didn't know at the time. We didn't know that these are the
right.
things you're looking for, like immediately.
What month was this?
February.
February. So this February. Is,
yeah,
so, oh, this is early.
So, yeah,
early.
So nobody knew what to tell you. I immediately was sick. Then I had to get on an international flight the next morning, fly to New Zealand.
Oh, you're a super spreader.
I'm a super spreader.
You brought it to New Zealand.
I brought it. It was in me. And I put it in you. So we got there. I was like 4 days in the hotel because we had 4 days off before the shows. So I was just drinking water, hot showers, taking care of myself, hot tea, just trying to get through it. And it sucked. But it wasn't. But you didn't know yet that like how bad this thing could have been. If I didn't know how bad it could have been, I would have been freaking out. But.
Right, you'd have probably. Yeah, that's interesting, right?
Because, so we isolated pretty well. Like, you know, I wore a mask. I grabbed a mask, you know, before I even got on the plane, because I just instinctually like just having, you know, friends that are you know going to Taiwan and going to Japan. Mm-hmm. Like you just see the mask, like okay, I'm probably just going to wear the mask anyway.
So this was pre awareness of COVID.
Well, no, it was happening.
But you didn't connect the dots. You didn't think you had COVID.
I asked the doctor when I got to New Zealand, "Do you think this is COVID?" He's like, "Did you have a fever?" I'm like, "I don't remember if I had a fever." Well, then you didn't have COVID. You don't have COVID. Okay.
Doctors are cocky sometimes.
Yeah.
Man.
So I got through that. We did the. I was able to do the show. I didn't close my throat down enough to. I would have to cancel. Then the next shows were going to be in the Northwest.
How hard was it to sing?
It was not fun. It was not fun. So we had to kind of adjust the set around a little bit. Don't put the hard ones in. And I got to Hawaii to go train with Luis, and some of the guys there. Chad was a Muay Thai instructor, and I'm starting to do the Muay Thai, and I'm like, dude, this hurts. Like, my hands have never hurt this bad. If I thought maybe I sprained them, because right after I recovered in New Zealand, I went and trained in New Zealand, thinking, I'm just going to fucking gut it out, you know, gonna walk it off, rub some dirt on it. And
yeah.
And I felt okay then, but when I finally got to Maui, I'm like, this is not right. This hurts. I can't fucking do this. I thought, well, maybe I sprained my wrist. So, months go by, they're not healing. I'm going through harvest at this point, and like nothing's like they're not healing up.
We should explain harvest, your winery.
Winery. So getting into the grapes. But I finally went to a doctor, arthritis doctor, and he was like, okay, so walk me through when you first saw the da-da-da. And I started walking him through everything. He goes, you had COVID, and what some of the side effects that you find are that inflammation, so whatever, I guess, so it's some kind of a rheumatoid response. That alone would be, well, maybe I'm just 56 and I have arthritis, but my blood work was completely clean everywhere else, no other issues anywhere else in my body but just the wrists, explaining that, but I still have the cough. So whatever cough I got in New Zealand, like other day, I'll have a coughing fit for, you know, for 10 minutes. Really? I'm coughing up stuff. So I have lung damage from it still.
Still?
Yeah.
Still every other day now?
Yeah.
Now, yeah. When you train, is your cardio diminished?
Yeah.
How much?
Enough to where, and it's just my, my motivation is diminished because I'm like trying to do stuff and my hands hurt.
Still?
Not anymore. Now that I'm on medication.
What medication did you put you on?
Methotrexate.
You're on meth?
I'm smoking meth to get through it.
Look great.
Thank you. I lost a lot of weight.
Most meth heads, they get sketchy.
It's much easier to push that like second helping away now with the meth.
Right. Yeah. You got no appetite.
But no, methotrexate, which is not fun to be on. But my wrists have cleared up. I'm back to, you know, doing stuff.
What is methotrexate normally?
It's for rheumatoid arthritis, but it's basically a chemotherapy. Basically.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Have you tried CBD?
I'm on CBD now.
Have you tried CBD without the methotrexate stuff?
No.
Because a lot of
the methotrexate goes for about, it's like a, you know, I've done it for now 10 weeks. I have another 5 weeks supposedly I'm going to do. But I'm going to continue the CBD after that.
How much CBD are you taking a day?
A dropper.
Just one?
Yeah.
I take 1,000 milligrams a day. So it's a high dose, but I find that...
How big is that?
It's a lot of droppers.
Okay.
I use CBDMD, and I forget... I think it's the 1,300 milligram dropper. I forget how many droppers I have to do it to hit 1,000 a day, but
okay.
That seems to be the magic number. Where I have, it's kind of like turf toe, but it's from kicking. I have some pretty intense pain sometimes in my big toe, particularly after a hard, heavy bag workout. Like yesterday, I had it pretty bad.
Okay.
But man, I'll take the CBD, and now today, like I'm bending my toe right now on the ground. There's no pain at all.
Okay,
and it's amazing. I fucking love it.
Okay,
I love it for so many. I love it for anxiety. I love it just for relaxation. But I really love it for joint pain. I think CBD is just. I can't sing its praises enough. I've had so many friends that have had like real joint problems. Like real pain, and then the CBD just completely takes it away. I've had a friend's dog. The dog was having a really hard time walking, like walk with a limp. He gives the dog CBD, and like 2 hours later, the dog's like up and moving around, and he's like, this is crazy.
Listening to Cheech and Chong records.
Getting high, just chilling. Dave Foley had pretty bad arthritis in his hands to the point where he couldn't straighten his fingers out. Wow. Got on CBD, and now his hands are just mobile again.
All right.
Yeah. Stuff's legit. Okay. It's just that and adjusting the diet are the two main things.
That's what I noticed. This flares up when I have more than a glass of wine and some gluten in the dinner.
Yeah,
then it flares up. So it's connected.
It's that goddamn gluten. There's something about it. Mm. Have you? But you, your restaurant, you use heirloom pasta though, don't you? Use heirloom.
We were. I mean, it's 50-50. Mm-hmm. It's commercial flour with, because we're finding that it's not holding up like you expect pasta to hold up.
Mm. So, in what way? In the texture?
Yeah, just texture doesn't hold. So we're brewing a blend of the heirloom along with commercial.
That's interesting. It doesn't hold up. But in Italy, they use the heirloom wheat, right?
Mm.
No.
Not necessarily, no.
Really?
They're getting a lot of Arizona. There's a lot of Arizona wheat in the stuff you get from Italy.
Really?
Yeah, because the commodity, that hard winter wheat that we grow is a great blender in, because they bring all the wheat, they get it together, and they send it to Italy. They blend it. They pick their mix, and they blend it. So they actually sell our wheat back to us in the form of great Italian flour. But it's actually grown in the United States.
That's interesting. When I go over there, even though I eat pasta almost every day, when I used to be able to go over there, I didn't get bloated.
Right.
But if I eat pasta here, I just get thick.
Well, there's so many other little things that are going on around it, right?
Yeah.
So you're probably over there, you know, for the average traveler, you're in a foreign country, it's magical, you're walking around more, there's lots of stairs, you're eating dinner probably earlier in the day or whatever, but you're still walking around. Your activities are increased, and the wines you're having are probably nicer quality wines. So all that stuff ends up being a better experience for you, so your body's not reacting in a way. Over here, you're like, eh, maybe I won't go for the walk. Maybe I'll drink more than I should.
I like what you're saying, but no, okay. Not me.
All right.
Over here, I work out like a fucking terrorist. And over there, I barely work out at all. I'm getting hammered every day. I'm eating until I literally can't stick another ravioli in my face. No, that's not what's going on. Right. I don't know what's going on. I'm definitely walking around quite a bit, you know, but I work out. I mean, I'm just always doing something here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, and you know, I don't know. I don't know what the difference is, honestly.
Because I'd always thought it was an heirloom wheat. And like, there's a type of wheat, you would know this. What is the 00? Like, what is?
Yeah, Tipo 00. So it's on the bag, it actually says Tipo, TIPO, and then a 00, and that's a very fine ground white flour. And you normally for pastas, you're blending that with semolina flour. So it's usually about a 2/3 to 1/3 ratio.
And semolina is the Arizona hardy?
No. Semolina is just another version of what, you know, what you're putting in that pasta to make those glutens stick together. And
so that's to give it like a bite, so it has like a chew to it.
Yeah.
Because there's I don't remember the brand, but I buy this particular spaghetti that's just goddamn delicious, and it's from Italy, and it's that 00
okay
flour, and it's just such a good pasta. And that has a better effect on me than if I buy like a standard American brand.
Well, if you're buying dried pasta in the States and making your food out of the dried pasta, you probably have a lot better results if you actually made your own fresh flour pasta.
Oh, sure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, fresh pasta is the shit. It's such a different taste, right?
Yeah.
Like pasta's okay. I like pasta, period. But fresh pasta, like, have you ever been to Felix in Venice?
No.
Good Lord. Next time you're there.
I brought you stuff.
Ooh, what'd you bring? What'd you bring?
Okay.
Felix in Venice.
We'll start here.
Is a must-go-to restaurant.
So we're going to get to this other one in a minute, but...
Shout out to
you. Remember
Janet and
you
Evan.
Heard me talk about Todd. Todd yes. Fox. Yeah, so he just wrote... This is another book he just wrote. It's like personal protection, family protection book. Awesome. We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
What I brought you.
You come prepared.
Oh, yeah.
You don't fuck around. You have t-shirts.
Yep.
That looks like a cooler. Is that a cooler?
Yeah, this is your cooler. These are your t-shirts.
Oh.
But I brought you our olives.
Ooh, right. Olives.
A couple wine glasses.
I realize at this studio we don't have your tarantula hawk. That's at the old studio. We must bring it back.
I'm leaving.
We will have it.
I'm just going to leave it.
Do not worry. What is this? What are these beverages?
Cider.
Is this alcoholic?
Yep.
Can't drink it right now.
I know.
I have to wait.
It's November.
I have
Sparkling cider, sparkling mead, sparkling white wine.
Sparkling mead?
Yeah.
Is it made with honey?
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. I've never had that.
Now you will.
What is that like? I always read about that in the Conan books.
It's great. It makes you want to, you know, crush your enemies.
Crush your enemies.
See them driven before you.
Hear the lamentations of the women.
Yeah.
Ah.
So these are for you.
Now, are these things that you are making?
Yeah, these are all. Oh, these are Pussifer wine. Pussifer wine.
Have you? When did you start doing that? Beers and
couple of
meads.
A year and a half ago.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the motivation behind that? I mean, you were just busy enough with your fucking wine,
convenience,
and your food, and your restaurants, and your music, and your three bands, and your
right.
Oh, Jesus!
I got bored, so I decided to take it up a notch.
You're these a legit you. Workaholic, my friend.
Oh yeah. So that's for you.
Well, thank you very
I'll
much.
Leave it over here for you somewhere.
Fantastic. I will send a photograph when I'm drinking it on November 1st.
Because this is for your marijuana cigarettes.
Oh, dude.
You won't be able to fit your bongs in here.
I don't use the bongs anymore.
The long bong won't fit.
Ooh, that's a dope box though.
But this is for your marijuana cigarettes. Or your mushrooms, as it were.
That's a legit lunchbox. Yeah. I had a lunchbox. My last lunchbox I had was in the 7th grade or 8th grade. I moved to a bad neighborhood, and I realized you can't bring lunchboxes to school, or kids get very upset with you.
So this is for you as well. This is Todd's new book, Protection for and From Humanity. and I'll let you read up on that.
But for and from.
Yeah, so he's the one that got me into doing the Muay Thai stuff, and now for his book, he's actually, this is kind of his promotional item he's doing with the book is fucking gloves.
He's making his own gloves?
Yeah, I'm having them made, I'm sure.
Who makes these for him?
I don't know. Find out.
Oh, okay. Nice. You like these?
Yeah.
Now, you've only been doing Muay Thai for how long now?
Not even a year.
And No problems with the hip, because you've replaced.
There's a weird shift that happens in the hip. I got one of those little hammer thingies, you know, the little electric massager things.
Yeah.
So, that's weird, right?
No, those are good. Theraguns.
So what happens is if I go a little too far, what's happening is my hip joint kind of just shifts forward a little bit and starts pinching something. Ooh. And I'll just stand on my left foot, use that hammer on the hip. Done. We're fine.
Dude, you're a robot.
Get back to work.
You're kind of a cyborg now.
Kind of a cyborg, a little bit.
Now, did they give you a full hip replacement or is it just a resurfacing?
Full hip.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is the, like, John Wayne Parr just got a hip resurfacing and there's videos of him 12 weeks after surgery kicking the pads.
Now, I can't remember specifically, but I want to say it was 3 months before I actually got back on the mats. They were like, you're not going to want to do that for 6 months, but you can probably start getting back and doing some things in 3 months.
That's 12 weeks.
And, of course, 9 weeks, you start to get mm-hmm. a little itchy and you want to get out there and do stuff. So, yeah.
So you slowly moved around a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're doing just some basic positional drills and just doing that kind of stuff, you're fine. But, you know, sparring is a, you know, then you're...
Heavy loads.
Then you're being a dumbass.
Yeah, it's the one where they hack off the top of the hip bone, they put a fake top, and then they screw it deep into the bone.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of has to stay with you forever.
Yep.
Because they can't really do that again, right?
Nope. That's it.
Yikes.
Done. But I have a weapon. So if something happens, as long as I can balance on one foot.
You pull that out and beat
I can pull
death.
This thing out. Yeah. It's like a big blade in the middle of my bone and I can jam it into your jugular.
Right, like those canes that turn into a sword?
Yes.
Or umbrellas?
Don't recommend it.
The pain that you must have been in to agree to do that had to be pretty goddamn substantial.
Yeah, well, the guy said, like, and it was a lot of stomping on stage that did it. I pretty much damaged my right hip, not my left, because I did a lot of stomping with my right foot.
Did you feel pain while you were stomping?
No, it was like, you know, years later. That's like, you know, a decade or more of doing that. And then I just thought that I was being a wimp, that I wasn't, you know, healing, or I was didn't push through it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or I wasn't working out enough, but when they actually got in there, like, dude, you have like a gobstopper for a hip, so there's no padding, there's nothing. It's like a mangled chunk of pumice.
All of the
gone,
yeah,
gone. It was just like
all the cartilage chewed up.
Gone. Yeah. So
there was no possible hope for stem cells or anything.
No, they were like, they just take that off the table. You've had this like this for 7 years, minimum. About the damage that was on the ball joint. They were like, we're surprised you weren't in here sooner.
Really?
Yeah.
And were you limping at all when you were walking?
Yeah. It would just all of a sudden fire off and I couldn't walk.
Because I remember you saying you were doing drills and you couldn't move your hip right and you thought like you had like a hip impingement or something.
Mm-hmm. No, it was just, I didn't have a hip.
God.
Yeah, good times.
Michael Bisping just got both of his knees replaced.
Ouch.
He's like 43, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't think he's much older than that.
But he's had some monsters kicking them, so...
Mm-hmm.
You know.
There's that, but it's also running. He runs a lot.
Okay, yeah. I ran in high school quite a
bit. And he runs on the concrete, I believe. I mean, I don't know where he runs, but I know he's got a love of running.
They have concrete in a lot of places, so it could be anywhere.
Could be
anywhere.
Yes.
Yes.
But, you know, when you see a guy who's in his early 40s, getting his knees completely replaced.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
So what do you think went on with, is there something similar with bone structure and those kind of replacements that happened with Anderson Silva's shin? Or is it just like...
No, he just checked. like when Weidman checked it, he most likely cracked it on the first one, mm-hmm. and then the second one he threw it again and just snapped it in half because.
But I mean, after he healed and then he mm-hmm. went back out and he started having some leg problems and like a year later, even though it was healed, like it was just wasn't healed enough. Or...
It takes a long time to heal a fracture like that mm-hmm. when a bone snaps in half. You remember Frank Mir when Frank Mir got hit by a car? Mm-hmm. He was on his motorcycle. He got hit by a car. He was not the same for years. He tried to fight again. I think it was like a year and a half-ish later after the accident, he wasn't the same. Yeah. It took quite a long time for the old Frank. And maybe, you know, you'd have to ask him. Maybe he never really was the same again. But just something about leg bones when they snap. First of all, you got to think you can't put any weight on them for a long time. So you've got all this atrophy. So all the tissue around it atrophies. All
right.
And that's got to rebuild. So you got to rebuild that while you're also trying to make sure that the bone is fully recovered. And while you're pushing it, who knows what kind of damage you're going to do to the tendons and the ligaments. And, you know, it takes a long time. Unless you're doing some shit, unless you're on some steroids, it takes a long time to build that muscle back up as well. So there's a lot going on there.
Which is, in a way, it's the not the opposite, but for the hip replacement, they had us walking, like, within mm-hmm. an hour.
Right, just to make sure that you have...
As soon as you wake up, yeah. They have you walking.
Yeah, that is a weird... Graham Hancock was in here, the other place, 6 weeks after a hip replacement. And he was walking around, and I was like, that is... You're walking like normal. This is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just make sure you start walking to make sure that you minimize the amount of atrophy.
Yeah,
I know Anderson got his knee blown out. I think it was Jared Cannonier in that fight.
Yeah,
but Cannonier hit so fucking hard. That could have happened at any point in time in his career. You know,
right?
It's amazing more guys don't have their knees blown out by leg kicks. You know now doing Muay Thai, like someone kicks your leg, like I'm sure.
Anthony Hardunk over at
that guy's terrifying.
Jesus, dude, we got video of like some dude going, seriously, just kick my leg. I want to see what this is all about. And Anthony's like, you don't want that. Seriously, kick my leg. Kick it. It's like guy crying. He's on the ground crying. And yeah. Anthony's like, you fucking asked me to do that. Yeah.
He's so big.
Yeah,
Hardunk was big for a heavyweight. I mean, he's a thick fucking Dutchman.
Yeah,
you know,
conk.
Yeah, those shins to the thigh, it's one of the most underrated pains.
Yeah,
it's terrifying to ask a guy to do that.
So yeah, I'm gonna pursue that a little bit. Just I'm not gonna ever use it for anything, but I just like that next level of awareness of
striking awareness.
Yeah, yeah. But the one thing I haven't done is I haven't gotten with an instructor to go just teach me how to not get hit. Like mm-hmm. just that awareness of seeing what's coming and starting to understand the sequence of events that are going to lead up to that strike. Then you have, of course, in the UFC, you have unconventional strikers that are going to come at you from angles you didn't expect. But in general, just and not really because I want to get in a fight, just because I want to have that extra part of my brain exercised to under just to action reaction.
I know it's funny, like if you say I want to learn how to play piano, someone doesn't say what are you going to play in concerts. They don't say that. But if you say I want to learn Muay Thai, like, oh, you're going to fight?
Yeah,
like no, tomorrow
just
like to learn it. It's a skill.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, I'd like to learn how to do a back handspring. I'd like to learn how to do a lot of things,
right?
Just seems like a cool thing to learn.
Yeah.
But that's one of those things, if you even say you want to learn it, people are like,
right,
why do you want to learn that? What are you going to fight people?
Right.
Like, no, it's an interesting thing. First of all, it's cool.
Right.
You know, it's an interesting thing to know. But so your coach doesn't work with you on defense?
I don't really have a coach.
You don't?
At the moment, because it was just Todd was kind of, he and I were the ones going around the world and mm-hmm. training with insane instructors, really good coaches. So you get...
Oh, so he's a practitioner, but he's not a coach.
Well, Todd's a black belt under Rodrigo Faggi for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But he and I caught he caught the bug before I caught the bug. He made me catch the bug. So, you know, with his connections, traveling all the time as he did, he would have insane instructors. And then this instructor would introduce you to that instructor when you go into that town. So we had great... It was really cool to meet these people, but the problem that I was having was, you know, when you're trying to have Carlos Condit teach you how to do something. He's like 4 feet taller than I am. And like, it doesn't, what he does isn't necessarily going to translate to me. So you could see him struggling to go, how do I explain this to you as a midget? Like, how do I make this work for you? Because it works for me because I have length and I have an entire history of being, you know,
well, badass. A lot of the ties are very short, you know?
Yeah. So that's why I love when you get to like someplace like New Zealand, it has short people beating fuckers up. It's great. So you know, and they're my height. So I got a lot more out of that stuff in Australia and New Zealand.
Have you been to Thailand?
No, have not yet been.
That would be a move. Once everything opens up, go there. And do some training there. There's a lot of people that go to Phuket because they have it set up where, you know, you could stay there, you could train there. And one of my business managers went there. He spent 6 days there just doing nothing but training and just enjoying it. Just going there and working out with, like, real Thai coaches every day. Guys barely speak English.
Yeah.
They've had 300 fights. And they'll show you how to do everything old school Thai. You know, classic Muay Thai stance.
I think we did that in Copenhagen. We went to an awesome gym there. This guy barely spoke English, but he could still instruct you because, you know, he's pointing and grunting.
Yeah. Well, also you mirror. You know, you see how they do it. Yeah. You know, they'll say look, and then they'll do it. And you're like, okay,
right.
But you feel so dumb when you watch someone who's like really good at Muay Thai. Like, there's, it's so effortless. You know, the it's so graceful. It's a really interesting art form, you know, because there's really only a few kicks. Like, they just got it down to mostly roundhouse kicks, a couple of side kicks, teeps, you know, front kicks, and that's about it. Everything else is like, they, unless they're going to do a cartwheel kick or some Sanchai shit, they're learning that from other people or just playing around and having fun. But the art itself, when it comes down to the kicking, but because they have that, they've got it down. Like this smoothness and the efficiency.
Yeah, the part that's really eluded me is that because I don't have enough hours in doing it, I don't really have the, like, you know, French had the liaison of this word kind of slides into that word. That transition of understanding, you can't throw that kick because you didn't do the thing before that set you up in the position to be in a position to throw that kick.
Right.
So that kind of stuff is very interesting and complicated and. In a way, kind of just, I stop. I'm like, I'm in my head too much going, okay, wait a minute.
I always equate it to like a vocabulary. Like if you talk to someone who's very articulate, they have a lot of words at their disposal. They have a deep understanding of how the language works. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you talk to a child, they can say some things, but it's kind of crude. And that's how most people are when it comes to martial arts. You're in the beginning in particular, you're basically like a child. You're a crude, clumsy with your words, whereas you talk to a master, you know, someone like Buakaw or something like that, and like there's the fluency, the fluidity, the efficiency of the movements. It's just such a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah,
always in the right position, you know, like one of my favorites for sure. Have you ever watched Giorgio Petrosian fight?
No.
Oh my god, you got to watch that guy fight. He is,
I may call have. Him the doctor. Todd's always, it was always sending me videos of, dude, you got to watch this guy fight. So he most likely has sent me videos of
Petrosian that. Petrosian at one point in time, when he was 23, I think he was 43-0. And like some 35 knockouts or something like that. By the time he was 23, he'd beaten a shitload of world Muay Thai champions. And if you have the UFC Fight Pass... UFC Fight Pass is great because it has not just UFC fights, but it has a shitload of other promotions, including It's Showtime. It's Showtime goes way back to like the early 2000s, like 20 years ago. And It's Showtime was the precursor to Glory.
Okay.
I'm wearing a Glory shirt. There you go. And Glory is like the premier kickboxing event of today, right? So... Petrosian, I think, still fights for Glory. But Petrosian, when he was in his 20s, you could catch those on UFC Fight Pass. I just was watching it yesterday in the gym. I was watching him when he was 23, and he's probably deep in his 30s now. I think he's probably 37 or something like that. But he's been around forever, and he is just one of the smoothest, most elegant fighters to watch, but ruthlessly effective. But his technique is just perfect. He's always in a perfect position. And he's a guy, if you watch him train, constantly drilling, just drill over and over and over again. And, you know, they'll do situational drills and positional drills. And so his footwork and everything is all second nature. Like when the guy comes to him, he steps aside, left hook, right kick, and like all these techniques that flow together so perfectly in a match. You could watch him rehearse them over and over. There's a ton of videos on YouTube and watch him train. But they call him the doctor because like literally like he it's like he's doing something different than all these other guys are doing. And when you're talking like world champions, and he was KOing them when he was in his early 20s, wild to watch. Just because it's like, what is he doing different? Like, it's hard to see. Like, if you watch Mike Tyson in his prime, it's pretty obvious what he's doing different. You know? You watch Roy Jones Jr. in his prime. Pretty obvious. Faster than everybody. Ridiculous left hook. You're seeing it all. With Giorgio, it's like, how is he able to do this to these guys? Like, his understanding of position, of when to be there and when to not be there, it's just second to none.
The transition we're talking, you know, that's kind of the part that's always eluded. Even with jiu-jitsu, like those in betweens are where you kind of lose the fight, like the match kind of loses. So, you know, we ended up here. So Ortega, this last fight that Ortega did, I felt like the thing that really was like surprising to me was not necessarily that he's like, oh, now you've trained striking and you're doing really well at the striking. It was like those in-between things that he was doing that I was like,
yes,
I haven't seen that in most UFC fighters. Like just that in-between thing that he put the glue together to...
He wasn't leaving any holes.
There's no holes.
Yeah, no holes.
No holes.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was a masterful performance.
Yeah.
Because that guy, the Korean zombie, Chen Sung Jung, is very
tough. He's dangerous.
Very dangerous. And Brian neutralized him. He neutralized everything. And he looked so smooth and professional. Like everything he was doing looked so good.
Yeah.
And the Korean zombie said he doesn't remember anything of the last three rounds. Doesn't remember them. Because remember when he got hit with that backspin elbow?
Yeah.
Yeah, he got KO'd. And apparently he was just on autopilot for the rest of the fight. Doesn't remember. He says he's very embarrassed. Doesn't even remember the fight.
Wow.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. Guys get KO'd and they'll go back to their corner. They're like, is it the second round? It's the fifth round. And like, it is? Yeah, it's the fifth round. Come on, man. You're losing the fight. Like, I am?
All right.
I thought it just started. Like, they literally don't remember fights. And it's because they're literally concussed.
You got bonked.
While they're inside the ring.
Luckily, there's no, you know, when we're doing shows, I'm not getting bonked. So if you lose track of the show and you don't know what song you're on,
does that ever happen?
That's actually a good thing because you're like you're in the zone,
right?
And you're actually like you've kind of disappeared into that story you wrote. You're no longer thinking about the story you wrote. You're now just delivering the story unconsciously, but consciously.
Or you dipped into that Pussifer lunchbox and got some of that good shit.
The marijuana cigarettes.
Woo! That will do it. There's been many a show where I'm in the middle of a bit going, "What bit is this?"
Yeah.
He generally just takes a second, like, oh, yeah, airplane. Yeah. keep talking. You're good. But the shows that you do, have you ever been in a situation where you're in the middle of a song and you're so in the groove that you kind of forget what song it is?
Don't know where I am.
Really?
Because you're so in it, you're in the middle of it, but then you make that mistake of thinking about it or having a memory of like, oh, like a week ago I fucked this song up. And as soon as you have that thought, you're like, pew.
Isn't that interesting about live performances?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of why, you know, that's kind of why you do those.
Yeah.
So this thing we got coming up is not, we already recorded it. We filmed it at Arcosante. And
what is Arcosante?
Arcosante is that is this insane concrete village that was I'm gonna get his name wrong. Paolo Soleri, look that up, buddy.
Paolo Soleri.
Paolo. He was a student of Frank Lloyd Wright.
Oh.
So he built this foundry in the middle of the desert on your way up to Flagstaff from Phoenix. It's kind of off the 17. And it's
for what purpose?
For bells. They make these kind of bell structures, and they make so there's a kind of a school to you can go attend to understand how to do foundry work, but also concrete, just understanding these concrete structures. And so it's all these locations, and there's kind of a school there. There's people that come through and travel. There you go. So Larry,
is there an image of this place?
Yeah, look up Arcosanti.
Arco How do you Santi. Spell that?
A R C O, Arcosanti.
How did you find out about this place?
It's right near my house. It's like an hour away.
Whoa! Yeah. How fucking cool is that spot? Holy shit, man!
Yeah,
so that's all concrete.
Yeah.
Fuck.
So it's the added pressure. Like when you're playing live, it's just a live show. There's pressure because you're playing live, but there's not a lot of pressure because when it goes by you, the next song, don't worry about it. But when you're playing live in front of a camera and it's going to capture you fucking up, that's a lot of pressure. So we filmed a couple, like 2 weeks ago, we filmed the entire album. We did all the songs in these structures.
And did you have an outdoor audience? Is that
no? It was like no audience. It was no audience for it because we had to do it. We were doing it like mostly at night, like early rising, late rising. It was not easy to do, especially in this thing's supposed to be kind of this integrated with the natural terrain. So you've got rattlesnakes and shit everywhere. Like it's you're living in the desert. Your 360 views are the wilderness, the hostile environment. So
and no audience, and then you're singing.
And no audience is singing. So, but it's also hot. It's also cold. It's also like there's black widows, and so it's kind of not an easy thing to do, especially when you're trying to catch the sunrise and you want the song to land right on as the sun's coming up over the horizon, like all those kind of things and it's like fucking 6 a.m. and you're like fuck.
So you were recording as the sun was coming up.
On one song, but like then you're trying to catch other things with the stars on the other songs, and it's all timing. And am I going to get bit?
Dude, that sounds amazing. I'm super
fucking tired, and
I'm sure it sucked while you were doing that and getting up. Yeah. But the overall product.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about it, and that's what we're doing is streaming on the same day that the album comes out, on the 30th.
And what's it streaming on?
I don't know what the actual service it is, but it's pussiferlive.com is where you go to get a ticket to see it. And I think it's the same one that did, I want to say it's the same service that Mr. Bungle's doing. I think Mr. Bungle's show is the day after ours. So it's the same service, and
But it's available on the Pussifer website.
No, it's pussiferlive.com. Okay. So it's a separate website.
Is there a link to it on pussifer.com?
There should be on the main page, but if you just go to pussiferlive.com, that's where it takes you there.
Pussifer performing the new album in its entirety from Arcosanti in the Arizona desert. Dude, that is such a great idea. I love it.
Well, this whole lockdown thing, not being able to tour, this is our tour. This is it. So.
Yeah, it's been a weird one, right? And the fact that everybody was like, oh, around June, we'll probably be fine.
Not even.
Here it is, November almost.
Yeah, and I think the big thing, kind of circling back, is I'm still feeling residual effects of that thing. And I feel like there's a bunch of people that maybe I didn't almost die. I have friends who almost died.
I did as well.
It was ugly. So, and then you have people going, you guys are, apparently I'm being paid to say this. Eat a dick, dude.
Oh, you can't pay attention to those people. Those are the people that think that 5G is killing babies. People are out of their fucking minds. There's so much noise out there. It's so hard. It's so hard to pay attention. It's so hard to try to separate. I have two friends that came real close to dying, and then I have other friends that shook it off like it was nothing. Yep. I have a couple of friends that didn't even know they had it. They tested positive. They said, I didn't feel a thing. Jamie was sick for a day, and he was convinced it was ragweed.
Yeah.
But my friend Michael Yo, he came really close. He was in the hospital for quite a long time. And my friend Dr. Neil Reardon, he was in the hospital. He came very close to death a couple times. And he, I think folks that got it early on before they knew how to treat it correctly and what was going on and what to do. And
they
what
got their
to
asses
do.
Handed to them, for sure. Yeah, our friend Dean... His family, I'm going to get this wrong, so I'm sure Dean's going to light me up, but I think his wife tested positive, the kids tested positive, he tested positive, I think the parents tested positive. Then nobody showed any symptoms. He showed symptoms on a Tuesday, finally got into the hospital, almost died on a Sunday, then recovered quickly after because he's in shape. He's like mid-40s. He's a runner. Like he's not out of shape.
Mm-hmm.
But like there was a touch and go moment where he couldn't speak to you, couldn't talk to you on Sunday like that. So on a Tuesday showed symptoms, you know, not fucking cool at all on a Sunday, and then came out of it. So
meanwhile, Fatso Trump, 74 years old, yeah, eating French fries, kicks it in the weekend. Back on the campaign trail.
Yeah.
Looks 100 times better than Biden. They got him on steroids and Adderall. He looks great. He looks great. I'm thinking about trying Adderall now.
Yeah.
He looks so good. It's amazing. I saw him give a speech the other day. I'm like, the guy has never looked better. Like, COVID, like, literally, like, he had a hermetic effect.
Yeah.
And his body's actually stronger because of COVID.
Yeah. Still a douchebag.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Probably more.
Yeah.
Because now he thinks he's immune.
Cocky douchebag.
Doesn't have to worry anymore.
Yeah.
You know? Now he can go just have people spit in his mouth.
Yeah. Please.
And he's fine. It's all... It's just so weird.
Please do.
The world doesn't seem real. You know? It just... It seems like you have to remind yourself, okay, this is still real. This is the world.
Yeah.
You know?
But I think that's kind of what, you know, you had those good aunts, those good uncles, good friends when you were a kid that you kind of learn. There's a lot of influence you get from your parents. I've, you know, my dad is, you know, my whole world as far as influence, a good influence on decision making, right? But you also have those people around you that you should have around you if they're positive,
mm-hmm,
that it should be fairly easy to see right through bullshit and get to the core of a good decision. It should. But now with this fucking thing,
The phones.
It's very strange to like to, you know, the information you're getting to make that decision has been picked apart, and it's all dopamine dump.
Yeah,
charged. So you can't really. It's sensationalized. Conversations start with an argument.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Frosted Flakes, and if you don't like Frosted Flakes, fuck you.
You must be racist.
Yeah, you must be racist.
You must be a bigot.
Yeah.
I had Alan Levinovitz on the podcast, and he had he's actually working on a book about this now, but it was a series of tweets that he put up about what we're dealing with social media is the same thing that we're dealing with processed food. Processed food with all these preservatives, it fills you up, it's terrible for you. He's like, this is processed information. This is not how human beings are supposed to exchange information.
Right.
You're not supposed to get it in this 280 character form.
This should be a process you go through to digest the information.
Yeah. Well, it should be. People are supposed to talk like this.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to. This is one of the things that people love about podcasting. It is a digital thing, and you're getting it, and it's kind of impersonal in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also kind of personal because you and I are having a personal moment, and it's recorded. Like, we're in front of each other, we're looking at each other, and this is how people are. And we're nice to each other, and mm-hmm. And you say something, and I consider it, and we talk, and you get in real time to exchange information back and forth, and see how the other person responds to it, and then respond to their response. That's how people are supposed to talk, man. And this Twitter thing that people are doing, the most mentally ill people I know spend the most time on Twitter. And they're on it ranting and raving and blaming all these other people for their unhappiness. And it's so weird to see. It's like you're watching people they're self-inflicting themselves with venom.
Yeah. That's why I kind of like one of the things that I noticed when I got into the wine industry is that you have all these different walks of life, various political bents, various religious bents, you know, just various cultures all kind of coming together in this thing. And I don't have in my circle of people, we can all talk to each other. And all of those cultures are represented. All those political beliefs, all those religious beliefs, all those things are all represented in all the people that we deal with. And we have these civil conversations with each other, face to face. We're all busting our asses. We're all doing a thing. There's a puzzle we're trying to solve. There's a problem we've encountered that I don't know how to solve, and you know how to solve it. I'm trying to build this thing, and you're very good at building this thing. We're solving puzzles.
You have a core common ground.
Yeah, we have a core common ground from just from life. We're making a living. You have a living, and we're just talking. We're talking.
Well, I always felt
as soon as you go here, and when you're anonymous, it turns into this fucking ugly fight of polarized mess of, like, you have to pick a side, and it's like,
ugh. Yeah, you're on the wrong side of history.
From what I'm standing, like, there's the only thing we're really kind of massaging and trying to work around and picking a side on is weather, is Mother Nature. You're just trying to, she smacks the shit out of you and you're trying to fucking navigate it.
Mm.
And so that she's in charge and you are not in charge. And so
that's the thing about having a common thing that you do, like jiu-jitsu. Like, if you train jiu-jitsu, you're going to have Republicans and Democrats and progressives and libertarians. They're all going to be training together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'll laugh and smile at disagreements they have, because the agreement they have is that jiu-jitsu is awesome, mm-hmm. right? So they're in there trying to choke each other. And then the other stuff is like, you know.
I can choke you. If I don't agree with you, I can just disagree, but then I get to choke you.
But it's not as important as the jiu-jitsu, you know? It's
right.
Like,
right.
Somewhere along the line, it became like you have to be on my side or fuck you. And that these ideological echo bubbles that people, these chambers that people get into, it's just, it's never before happened where you've had people that can so readily find people that agree with them wholeheartedly and have full confirmation bias. Like only people that are on this side and this, that believe these things and this core group. And it's real obvious. Like it's cut and dry what they believe and what they want, what they see and what they don't. And then it's reinforced by CNN and MSNBC and Fox News and, you know, all these biased news sources.
If there is a division, I guess that I would make, it would be fundamentalism versus fucking chill out-ism. Just, I don't know. It's because, you know, people are so, your far left and your far right are bumping each other's asses on the other side of the circle.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same. They're all one fucking stroke away from Handmaid's Tale, and they are burning books together.
Yes.
Telling you what pronouns to use and what religion you're supposed to pick and
right.
all this stuff. They're the same person. They're the same people. And we're in the middle going, I just want some pasta.
It's super similar. Super similar. And it's all coming together with this pandemic because people are being forced to be locked away. You're locking away. You're staying away from people. So you have less interaction, less actual real contact with people, more digital contact, more processed bullshit way of communicating with people. And then there's the fear. And then there's the lack of money because everybody's out of work. And then there's all this panic that comes with that and this anger and anxiety and existential angst of the disease itself and the combination of all these factors together with a fucking douchebag for a president, chaos and no good choices for opponents. You know, everybody's just voting. The people that aren't voting for Trump, they're just voting for not Trump. They're not voting for Joe Biden. Like, no one's super excited about Joe Biden. They're voting for not Trump. So you're sitting there, like, if you're an observer watching this, you're like, we got to get out of here. Like, this is going to blow.
Yeah, I think, you know, you start to default back to the position of, okay, well, this, I'm just going to step back and just see, in my lifetime, what haven't we seen? Okay, well, in my lifetime, we haven't seen a female black president. So if you're voting for Biden, in a way, you have to be a little honest about it. You're actually voting for Kamala Harris because it's very possible she's going to be the next president.
Possible.
Right.
100%.
But is she an awful person? Is she a bad person? Is she a good person? I don't know. I just know that it's a step forward. It's something that hasn't happened before me, and I get to be alive when we have a female president.
Well, we've never had a Nazi president either.
Right.
Would that be a step forward?
Well, we already have that.
Oh, I don't think he's a Nazi. He's got a Jewish son-in-law. Can't be a Nazi. His son-in-law, though, is the Antichrist. Have you ever seen him next to Damien? Have you ever seen?
That's great.
From the movie?
Go.
Dude, we've done it multiple times.
Come on. Put it up there.
Him and Damien from the movie, Damien the Omen. Mm-hmm. You look at the two of them together, you're like, oh.
There he is.
He's the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like the devil's son. It's the devil's son-in-law.
Got
That's
it.
What it is.
I like it.
Or maybe he's the devil's son and he's Trump's son-in-law.
Yeah, maybe he's got he's got the handle.
Maybe he's
Trump.
Just a nice guy with great hair and a beautiful suit.
And you're just making it up.
Yeah, maybe he's just got really good bone structure and I'm jealous. Could be that. And a beautiful wife that happens to be Trump's daughter. Maybe that. Maybe I'm just a bitch. Could be that. But if you see a photo, you got a picture of him? Look at the two of them side next to each other.
Damien who?
Damien, The Omen. Oh. The Omen.
God damn it, Brian.
Chad, you're not that young. You should know who the fuck... How old are you, man?
46.
You should fucking know who The Omen is, bro.
Oh, yeah, look at... Right there. The fifth photo over.
Yeah, just say...
That's some...
Yeah, like, come on, son.
He's actually right now not looking at the camera. He's talking to the wolves across the fence.
Right.
On the other side.
They're just they're making eye contact with him.
Yeah.
I mean,
delivering a message.
That literally is straight out of The Omen.
Yeah.
Damien The Omen, Jared Kushner. Google those two things together and go to images. I've seen it. We've pulled it up multiple times on this podcast. It's 100% accurate. Jared Cushman. Here, watch this. I spell Cushman. Images.
There you go. We're going to do there. Images.
Watch this. Nope. Who's that guy?
Well, he's Kushner? Famous now.
Is it Kushner, right?
Yeah.
We're
here. Oh, there we go.
There's got to be an image of...
Right there. So,
where?
Down.
Oh, yeah. Down on the bottom. Yeah, look. Come on, son. I mean, that's The Omen. That's him. That is him. Now go back to the images again, and there's one with him. It's like a portrait mode with up there, right where you, right above that one. Right above that one. Yeah, click on that. So look at Trump is blurry, and look at him. The devil.
He's got his hand right up his puppet ass.
Oh,
he's Satan. Like making him say the Satan thing.
We are so close. So close. So close to the final confrontation.
Just
but again, the, maybe I'm just being a bitch.
Order some goat's blood on Amazon. Maybe he's
a really handsome man with a slender neck. And a beautiful wife. Maybe I should just shut the fuck up. Maybe it's me, man.
It's probably you. It's probably you.
No matter who gets in that office, they get skewered.
Yeah.
Interested to see what they'd say about Bernie. I was really hoping we could see what would happen if that guy would get in place. That was interesting to me. What would happen if somebody got in place and said, you know what, we're going to make college free. We're going to completely absolve you of student debt. We're going to make Medicare for all. We're going to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. All those things that are – I'm not an economist. Maybe it wouldn't have worked, but I was interested to see. I'm like, that seems like to be a good use of taxpayer money. Like, if you're going to use taxpayer money, and most of them are using it for –
Well, the problem now it is if you want to know that scenario, you don't have anybody who's going to go, okay, let's honestly look at it, and we're going to present the case for against, in the middle, like what the possibilities might be. You don't have anybody that's going to actually be loud enough to tell you the answer that you're looking for.
Yeah, and but
as far as like actually
just...
somebody breaking it down, because if you try to Google that, what is that information? All this shit's going to be in the way talking about, you know, socialism and whatever. So you don't know. I mean, and I'm not necessarily for Bernie. I'm just saying I don't know because I can't find the paper that isn't biased to present that argument to me.
Well, to me, it was pretty shocking that the only people that I was interested at all were blocked out by the system. Tulsi Gabbard, Bernie Sanders, Andrew Yang. Those are the only people I was interested in. Right. And they were completely blackballed and pushed out by the system. They're like, fuck you.
Normally when you're going to find something out about a history of a place, you kind of follow the money to really see the records. So follow the reason. You know, why were they, so who's blocking them out and why would they be blocking them out? And follow that breadcrumb trail to see why.
I just want it to be over.
Yeah.
And I want Civil War to be here already, so I know how many bullets to buy.
It's like Tuesday, roughly.
It just seems like it's coming.
Yeah.
Seems like it's coming. But I feel like this is a good place to be. First of all, this is a very neutral ground because it's a blue spot in a red state.
It really is. Yeah.
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 And a red room.
Yeah. Arizona is, it seems like it's, well, and on paper, and you never know, the polls don't mean shit, but... they're saying Biden's ahead in Arizona. Which
how is that possible?
I don't know, but like
that's a red state
because where I live, like that's all day long. You've got the dude like with the Trump flag driving around in the car, and it's like, can we just have a coffee? Can we just talk? Like no,
fucking freedom.
Fuck you.
Honk for freedom.
It's just can we just
how come you not honking?
Yeah, and then you're in a fight because you didn't honk. Like, fuck
you didn't even fucking honk for freedom. Too busy sucking cock, huh?
Yeah. Like, for enslavement. I suck cock for enslavement. I'm into it.
Some people are into that. They want you to tie them up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are you going to do? It's a confusing time, too, because a lot of these states that were red are getting infiltrated by people like me that are abandoning the blue states. They're abandoning California, but taking with them their shitty voting habits.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm going to go to this place with freedom and then just take it all away.
Yeah.
And well, you don't need that many guns. And what are you going to do? Do whatever you want? Well, that doesn't seem right. We need some regulation. And then it all becomes California.
Yeah. That's like, you know, there are things, and it is funny, the business that I'm in, they're in the alcohol business, it's completely contrary to what you would think about the people who are like, less government, less regulation, less all those things. Like, but when it comes to wine and you know, that kind of thing in Arizona, it's very California. They're like, they want to control everything you're doing. They want to know every move you're making. There's all these hoops you got to jump through to get things done. It's funny.
How so? In what way?
Just in the regulation of alcohol and how they interpret, you know, they're very loose.
That's Arizona loose. In general?
Yeah.
In specific,
yeah.
Rather?
Yeah, for the winemaking, there's a lot of hoops we have to jump through as winemakers.
Come
in the
on
state.
Here to Texas, bro. You can make wine with a gun. They don't give a fuck. Fredericksburg, right out here, man. It's not far from here.
Yeah.
They have great wine.
Yeah.
Allegedly. I don't know shit about wine.
Allegedly.
I like your wine.
Yeah.
I know it tastes good.
You're going to like more of my wine.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. November 1st.
I like your wine. I just don't know why I like it. Have you seen Sour
because
Grapes?
Because it's made with love.
That too. Have you seen Sour Grapes, the documentary?
Yeah. No. Yes. Parts of it. I haven't seen the whole
film. I haven't.
It's pretty amazing.
That's what I keep hearing.
It's amazing. Yeah.
That this guy made fake wine that was supposed to be these really expensive bottles and duped all these like real wine connoisseurs.
Well, so when I first heard about the film, I was under the impression like I sat next to that guy. I was at a Australian consulate wine dinner in Beverly Hills with Peter Gago from Penfold sitting next to me, and that guy was sitting next to me.
What is that guy's name?
Sour Grapes.
Sour Grapes, the documentary. Ruby?
Ruben At?
No. Yeah, so I met that guy. I sat next to him. I didn't buy any wine from him.
Luckily.
But I met him. So initially I was like, you know, fuck that guy for like duping all these people. But the thing that they're basically saying was that, yeah, that aside, yeah, he fucked a lot of people up. But his ability to do what he was doing, to put these wines in bottle and mimic what the palate, the nature, the color, everything about it, and being able to duplicate the what's in the bottle to the point where it would fool Assam. He was like, he's an alchemist. Like, he was really good at like making it. He wasn't just like putting wine in a bottle and selling you the bottle. Like, if you opened it and you tasted
really
it,
you really thought it was
that wine, you would go, that seems like not a great version of that wine, but that's that wine.
Oh, so you could tell that it was slightly off.
In some cases. That's
Did you try any of his wine?
No.
No. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, I would like to try it.
But like they were just saying, the guy really was able to get close to mimicking the palates and structures of these wines. So that's why.
What's his name again, Brian? Rudy Kumoyuma? How do you say it?
Ruby Kernowan. Or here, it's right here.
How do you say that?
Kerniawan.
Rudy Kerniawan. Okay.
Rudy.
Interesting. So how did this guy do this? Like, if you
no idea.
Like, if it's such a fine art to create a great wine, and I know you, I've tried multiple wines from
but
you.
What he was doing, you know, and I'm speculating on this. I haven't seen the film, but what he was doing was just to fool you right now. That wine might not last in that bottle once
you.
So it's not gonna hold up. It's not the structure. It's not the structure of wine. I mean, he was literally putting dirt and things in to create that initial impression so that when you taste it to investigate it, you're okay, I think that's what that is. And then he write the check and he's like, beep, much.
There is a fucking great book that I am in the middle of that you would love that's based on...
But you're going to read this one next, right?
Yes, I'll read that one. It's my friend Graham Hancock wrote the foreword to it, and then it's Brian Murrow Rescue's book. And here, let me find it. It's in my library here. It's called The Immortality Key. And it is all about ancient wine and the ancient Greeks, how they used, they put all kinds of stuff.
Take that note, if you don't mind.
Yeah, The Immortality Key. This is the, there, Brian's got it right there. And it's a really, just listen to the podcast, the recent podcast that I did with this guy. It's amazing. He's a scholar of the Greek classics and Greek history. And he focused on what did they call it? Eleusinian mysteries.
Okay.
Where they would, they have these rituals where they would all, Eleusis, and they would all get together and they would have these rituals where they would drink this spiked wine. And the wine was, they've proven now, the wine was spiked with LSD-like components, was spiked with ergot, and they believe with probably a bunch of other different psychedelics, maybe psilocybin, maybe a bunch, but it was wines that had these psychedelic compounds, and they would have these incredible rituals, and people would go there, and this is like literally like the foundation of Western civilization came from these rituals, and then these rituals were forbidden by the Roman emperors, and then they started doing these rituals outside of outside of Greece, and they started doing them in Spain, and they found images of them doing it in Italy, and they found residue of these substances in pottery, and they've proven that it traveled all over the place. But what was fascinating to me is that their wine was never just wine. They would put all sorts of different things in the wine, and like wine was in that back then was not just simply grapes that were fermented. They would add cinnamon and honey and all these different things to the wine, which I thought was really fascinating.
Okay.
Yeah, but the fact that it was the source of their psychedelic rituals was all right. Wine.
All right, I'm going to read that.
Yeah. Watch the podcast.
Okay.
Because he's really great at describing it, and it's a very condensed thing. And then to further go, get into the book.
Did you watch the Fantastic Fungi film?
I haven't seen that yet.
Okay. I started watching. I was about halfway through. I've been kind of busy, Joe. But
you have 50 jobs. I would imagine you're a little, and you have a family. Yeah, I don't know how the fuck you do it.
Yeah.
It seems
well. My wife is a fucking badass. She's more of a badass than I am, and she holds a lot of other things down that that I wouldn't be able to do without her. So we have a nice symbiotic, energetic relationship. Yeah.
If I find someone who has that many jobs, they almost always have an awesome wife.
Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah, I could not do any of this shit without her. Absolutely.
That's a great thing, man. Have a great team like that, because when I look at all the things you do, I'm like, restaurants, wines, now you're making mead. And then
I'm going to Michigan now to like meet with a couple winemakers there, because I'm going to probably put a facility there, because my dad's house is there, so I'm gonna go. That's where I'm going, to my dad's house.
Well, so. They're trying to kill Michigan, so it's a good place to go right now. Literally, the governor's making everything fall apart.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna find out.
So yeah, you can get land for like a buck.
I'm gonna fix it.
Do whatever you need to do.
So we're gonna go. I'm gonna make mead, cider, and possibly wine in Michigan. So
I just had a friend came back from Michigan. He was telling me horror stories.
Not where I live. You look at look out my porch, and there's like a 16 acres of trees, deer walking through your yard. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know either. I'm just repeating what other people tell me. It's fun to do.
Yeah.
You can pretend you know what you're saying.
Yeah.
So what part of Michigan?
Up right on Lake Michigan.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Mason County.
Oh, so that's pretty rural, right?
Yeah.
Why did you choose that area?
That's where my dad was a teacher. So when I left Ohio, I went to live with my dad in Michigan, and that's where he was, wrestling coach and teacher in Western Michigan. So he built a house. He and Nick Tatarchik, this big motherfucker, he and his sons and my dad built the house that I own now in Scottville.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's why I'm going back to check in on the house, look at these buildings that we've been looking at, set up a situation. That's why I have my friend Tim White's with me in the car, my winemaking partner. So we're just exploring a building. We're going to talk to some growers. There's definitely cider there. I mean, there's apples everywhere, and I can make mead, you know, tomorrow, because you can get honey.
What keeps you motivated to constantly do like these new projects, another project like this?
Puzzles. I just fucking love puzzles. Like, you know, physical, large-scale, sculptural, and big-space puzzles.
So you think of like almost like constructing a new business or a warehouse or a factory like this, or creation of like an art piece.
Yeah, that, and also watching what we just went through with this lockdown. You know, I have three greenhouses, so we were able to feed a bunch of people in our 100, you know, family, extended family with the businesses and everything. We were able to like provide a little bit of food, not as much as they would need, but we certainly saved them at least one or two trips to the grocery store by providing them pasta, some of the fresh vegetables, a roll of toilet paper, you know, some soap, like that kind of shit that they just couldn't get at the store. We had to go through commercial channels to get some of these materials to get.
That's a severely underrated pleasure too, to be able to provide for people.
Yeah, I mean, it's so we were able to do that for over 100 families, you know, in our little circle. I want to build more of that. I want to do more of that. So I think
that's awesome.
So I think in a little town like, there's all these little towns all over the United States that dried up because they put the bypass in and put the Walmart and the Home Depot out away from the little town. Beautiful structures, you know, solid buildings that just dried up. So now you're seeing a resurgence of these little towns turning around from what they were to being these little thriving things. And the kind of cornerstone of that stuff is, you know, food, lodging, restaurant, brewery or winery, distillery. You know, there's that little concentration of things. Old Town Cottonwood, Arizona, that's a hot spot for wineries. Even though the vineyards and the winemakers are down in Wilcox or Sonoyta or Elgin, one of their tasting rooms is in this little old town that was just beat to shit like 15 years ago. You could you know, pick up the property for, you know, they'd pay you to take it. But now it's like a little thriving metropolis because you have this concentration of restaurants and wineries in this one little spot.
That's interesting. I think people are also starting to be aware of the value in having everything you need in close proximity where you're not shipping things in.
Right.
Like it used to be like the idea of Buy American was sort of this xenophobic, you know, semi-racist notion that fuck the rest of the world, we're number one. But now people are going, oh, but you know what? Wouldn't it be great if we can get our medicine here? We don't have to rely on boats that come over from China.
Right.
Like, wouldn't it be great if all the components that we need to make an automobile were actually manufactured and constructed right here? Wouldn't it be great if a fucking single cell phone was made in America? I mean, they don't make a goddamn one of them here. Right. Everything is made in Asia.
I still think you're gonna need to trade. The trade routes have to stay open. There's things that you can't do well or as well as somebody else in terms of just, you know, the spice trade was exactly that. You couldn't grow these spices here. You had to get them from somewhere else, and they were desirable. You know, tulips in Holland. Like there's something that's wanted and desired by other places. And there's things you can do really well.
For sure, but it would be nice to be self-sustainable.
Yes, yes.
Like, trade is always going to be significant.
Yeah, and those end up being the side dishes that are like the icing on the cake in a way. But you should be able to figure out what grows in your area, what's sustainable in your area, and what you can do to kind of like, you don't have to shut your borders off. Just be open to understanding that when the shit hits the fan, you guys kind of have a little self-contained thing that you can weather it.
Yeah, that would be nice. And this is a new feeling. Like I never thought about that before, but in the beginning of the lockdown, one of the things I was thinking was like, are we going to come to a point where we don't have enough food? Like, how is the food going to get here? Are people, if they're not working, are they going to grow the food? What happens if the early predictions were terrifying, right? They're going to lose 2 million Americans. Like, everybody was terrified. Mm-hmm. That didn't come to pass, but it was a moment where you're like, well, what if this gets way worse than that even? Like, how are we going to get to a point where there's no power? Are we going to get to the point? I mean, right. What are we relying on that's not necessarily going to be here? When we think about what do we need to sustain ourselves, what are we relying on that may or may not be here if the shit hits the fan?
And I feel like this was kind of a practice run.
Yes.
I feel like there's another one coming, and you're going to have a shit ton of people that don't make it because they're like, that first one was fake, and this one is too. Cool. Can I get a set of keys to your house?
Those people think it's fake. They're so strange. They're so strange.
I'm just going to add a friend a long time ago who had been in Iraq, and he had taken some whatever he had to take for anthrax or whatever. And he used to joke, like, if we get hit with anthrax, it's going to affect you. It's not going to affect me, and I'm just going to tell you now, I'm going through your pockets. Just so, no offense.
Yeah, I think of this as a practice run. And I wonder how many people are going to relax again after this is over. Because if something really big happens, like, and this is, I'm not trying to diminish anybody that lost a loved one or to diminish the significance of this disease, the 200 plus thousand people that died in this country. But compared to a super volcano, compared to a solar flare or an asteroid impact.
Or an entire state on fire.
Yeah, well, that's California.
Two states now. Colorado.
Yeah, California's lost more than 1 million acres.
Oh. So you add all those things up, and they start to really look like something.
Mm-hmm.
Little pieces.
Yeah.
So remember how to grow shit. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. Remember how to grow shit. That'd be very nice. And don't go to a place where it doesn't rain.
Yeah.
Things light on fire in a place where it doesn't rain.
Yeah.
Does it rain out in Jerome?
It hasn't rained for a long time, but we had so much snow 2 years ago and this last year that the snowpack actually fed the groundwater, so Jerome has a decent amount of water this year. It hasn't rained, so that's distressing.
But, do you irrigate all your stuff with well water?
We're on Mountain Spring, so we irrigate. Nice. Yeah, so we, and so, and it's all the stuff that's gathered from the snowpack that's coming down through the rocks. And
now, during this whole pandemic, what about your osteria and like serving food?
It did okay. We did everything, you know, whatever the rules were. We went above and beyond the rules, but we made sure we were providing food. We were making sure that we had stuff to serve you and making sure that people got fed.
What were the rules out there? Because it's not.
It was
the most
we were completely place. Shut down for like 6 weeks, 7 weeks, and then they said, okay, if you're serving food, you have alcohol, and you're serving food, you can sell the bottles to go. You can serve food to go. So we did that. Set the table up. Did that. And as soon as they said, okay, you can be at 50% occupancy. Okay, great. So you set, you know, separate the tables out and let people come in. You know, wear your mask on your way to the bathroom. Just be cool. Just be
right.
Cool.
Yeah.
And we did okay. I mean, we're not, you know, we're definitely down from last year, but there's restaurants. The restaurant industry is fucking hammered. I don't know if you've been keeping up on that.
Oh, believe me. I've had Adam Perry Lang in and Janet Zuccherini.
Yeah.
And
you should get Bobby Stuckey in here.
Who's Bobby?
Bobby Stuckey from Frosca Food and Wine in Boulder, Colorado.
Okay.
He's one of the, I see him out there championing, like trying to get this funding for the small restaurants.
These people that have these amazing restaurants, I was telling you about Felix. Felix is in Venice. They're very lucky that they have this outside area there. They can set up there, and they're very fortunate that they have that kind of space.
Yeah.
But so many people do not.
Yeah.
And L.A. just won't let them open. I mean, L.A. won't let them open at half capacity. They won't let them open.
Well, you can't survive at half capacity. Most restaurants are operating at a 10% margin if they're doing great.
Janet was explaining that when she was in here.
It's not what you think. It's like,
right.
The thing that blows my mind, though, jumping, you know, several hats here, is watching people go, oh, I'm just going to get my relief money and hang out. Hey, you want a job? We have this job we need to do. There's this job that continues to need to be done, even with all the shit's going on. Like we're still digging holes. We're still
pulling. Then I won't get my check.
Then I won't get my check. Okay, so let's just be clear. So you don't want to help me do the job. You want to get your money. Okay, it's not a lot of money, and it's not going to be forever. But I'm going to figure out a way to do this job without you. And then when you come looking for the job, when the money runs out, I'm going to say,
"Fuck you.
Eat a dick." Bag of salty dicks. Or sweet, dicks, salty, whichever. Delicious. Pick your, you choose, sweet or salty. Bag of dicks for you. Because we figured out how to do it without you. We needed you. And then you didn't want to do it. No amount of money is going to patch this up. Like, it's there's a thing we're actually doing. We have to tend the vines. We have to tend the greenhouse. There's things we have to do to get there.
So you're talking about specific instances inside of your community.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm talking about in Los Angeles or in a big city, you get that sort of diffusion of responsibility thing where there's so many people and there's a lot of people that just rather take that check.
Just take
but the check. But you're getting that out of employees.
Yeah. Well, used to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
We found a way around you.
But it's funny, you know, some people will be angry at you for that. They'll say, well, why should they risk their lives to work?
Yeah, why should you?
Well, do you, if you are going to do this with your employees, do you give them precautions on how to protect themselves?
Oh, absolutely. We do. Our employees are our first and, you know, first and foremost, our employees are the first consideration, keeping them safe. So any policies, if I have to take the hit for the policy, I'll take the hit for the policy. Because I'm protecting the employee.
Have you thought about providing them with vitamins and zinc and that kind of thing?
We put them in rubber suits.
Rubber suits?
I'm just kidding. I got the Devo masks with the hat. You just have policies in place, and you arm them with the authority to have a person not be able to be in your store if they're not going to respect the constant interaction that employee has to go through all day long. It's the same thing as in a plane. Like that flight attendant had just breathed your cigarette smoke for years. And do all of them die of cancer? No. Did some of them get cancer? Not all of them got cancer. Not all of them died of cancer, but they risk getting cancer.
That was the argument about bars too, right? Like they should be able to smoke in bars. Like what about the people that have to work in those bars?
Every day they're exposing that person to that thing. That's why you don't. Not because of you, not because of my clothing being stinking like cigarettes. No, it's because that person is being exposed to that every day, and the more they're exposed to it, the more they're being put at risk. That's your that responsibility for your fellow human is that.
But on the bright side, we have been provided with videos of these fucking non-mask protesting douchebags that just scream at Walmart and scream at people about the taking away my rights.
Comedy is like taking it's just away like my the rights. Cornucopia of comedy is just like billowing out like all year long. It's been incredible.
It's amazing how many people are
I
just
I have to cut you off pretty soon. I gotta
hit your flight. Yeah. So one more time, let's go over the thing. It's what is the date of the live stream?
October 30th. October 30th is the concert film being streamed online at pussiferlive.com. You can get tickets. The album itself is out on the 30th as well. You can get it, you know, Spotify, iTunes, Amazon. You can buy it off the pussifer.com website, CD, vinyl. I think the vinyl is all sold out.
And you have two songs that are available right now.
Yep.
And when it happens, we'll put it up on the Instagram and let all the folks know.
Thank you.
I know you're busy as fuck, so I really appreciate you taking the time to
no
come
problem.
Here. And thank you for all the gifts.
I'll read it. Book.
Protection.
You should wear the boxing gloves while you're reading it.
And I'm going to keep this lunchbox close, near and dear to my heart. Maynard, you're a bad motherfucker. I appreciate you, brother.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you. Bye-bye.